I was appointed subsequently by this court to assist him in the appeal of the district court's decision on that matter. Your Honor, Mr. Walker is presently in Green Bay Correctional Institution. He has been there since, or in the Wisconsin State Prison System since 1993, roughly October 8th, and as is present, he will be there at least until 2019. That is his first eligibility for parole. He received a sentence of life in prison with that first parole eligibility date that I mentioned, October 8th of 2019, after being charged with and convicted of first-degree intentional homicide, one count. Your Honors, Mr. Walker exhausted his state remedies. He filed a motion for post-conviction relief under the theory of ineffective assistance of trial counsel. That was subsequently denied by the trial court based on the prejudice prong of Strickland. He appealed that denial as well as his judgment of conviction to the Court of Appeals of the State of Wisconsin. They affirmed the trial court's decision. He filed a petition for review to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and they denied review. He did file his federal habeas petition pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 2254 back on March 12, 1998. The case had a relatively tortured procedural history, but eventually was decided on the merits by Judge Lynn Edelman of the Eastern District of Wisconsin on October 29, 2001. That brings us here today. Judge Edelman also concluded after review of the case that the prejudice element of Strickland could not be satisfied. Your Honors, I'm here today to tell you that I believe that the prejudice element can be satisfied and that Mr. Walker deserves a new trial. Without a new trial, he does stand the distinct possibility of spending the rest of his natural life behind bars, so this is a significant case. Your Honor, at trial, Mr. Walker was, as I indicated, charged with first-degree intentional homicide. Very briefly, he was accused of being essentially picked up by another gentleman early in the morning. He went to that individual's home. Eventually, they listened to music. Mr. Walker indicated that he had been using crack cocaine at the time.
I think we, because we have so little time,
sure.
I think we want to get right, you know, sort of right to it. What I guess I want to know from you is whether or not you have a case that would demonstrate that the evidence here would be admissible. In other words, you've cited New Jersey case, an Alabama case, an Arkansas case. Is there a Wisconsin authority that would demonstrate that the evidence you believe would help Walker regarding Mr. Sneed's conviction would be admissible?
Your Honor, in my review of the Wisconsin law, there is not a case on point dealing with admissibility of prior bad acts of an alleged victim where the defendant did not know about those alleged prior bad acts. Your Honor, I believe that those prior bad acts should come in here, and the reason I say that is because...
Didn't the state court itself say that they weren't admissible under state law?
The state court, I believe, concluded that he would not have admitted it based on remoteness and an issue of...
So if under state law this evidence was just not admissible, how can it be prejudicial for the attorney to seek not to seek its admission?
Your Honor, first of all, with regard to the trial court's ruling in the post-conviction motion, I believe that court made its decision based on discretion. It did not rule on the constitutionality of the confrontation right of Mr. Walker to present such evidence. I believe that that's the issue, that's the crux of the issue here before us today, is where the confrontation clause and Mr. Walker's right to present his case thoroughly to a jury of his peers comes up against an evidentiary rule, what should take precedence? And I believe that, Your Honors, it should be the confrontation clause of the U.S. Constitution. I believe that Mr. Walker had a right to present the evidence of Mr. Sneed's prior conviction and the dismissed and read-in conduct, specifically the fourth-degree sexual assault. Those two allegations, those two pieces of the charged conduct, were relevant to show Mr. Walker's self-defense claim. Your Honors, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No.
Oh. I believe that that evidence should have been admitted despite the fact that it was, as the trial court indicated, approximately 14 years prior to the incident here in question. The reason I say that is because, first of all, with regard to remoteness, I don't believe that remoteness by itself should ban Mr. Walker from bringing in evidence of this misconduct.
But there is Wisconsin law, is there not, that makes it quite clear that evidence of prior violent acts by a victim is admissible only if the defendant had knowledge of those prior acts and only to demonstrate a defendant's state of mind, and we don't have either here.
Your Honor, I don't believe that the court ever addressed the issue when it relates to a self-defense claim or as it relates, in this case, to Mr. Walker's life's liberty being at stake. Your Honor, the case I believe the court is referring to is McMorris.
Actually, Wisconsin versus Head.
Okay, I apologize. I know McMorris also addresses that particular issue.
It would be hard to see why Wisconsin would be required to have a different rule than the federal courts. And the rule in Wisconsin is identical to the rule in the federal courts. Indeed, the argument you're now making was an argument accepted by the D.C. Circuit in 1975 and reversed unanimously by the Supreme Court of the United States in United States against Eggers.
And Your Honors, I believe that that rule is wrong. I believe that...
Well, I don't see... Now we're in the position of saying counsel was constitutionally ineffective for failing to ask the Wisconsin courts to depart from the decisions of the Supreme Court of the United States. That's a little hard to do, isn't it?
Your Honor, I believe that the U.S. Supreme Court has also ruled, though, in, for example, cases such as Washington versus Texas, Chambers versus Mississippi, and Delaware versus Van Arsdale.
Yes, and what it held in Eggers is that that rule does not require the admission of evidence to show self-defense if the defendant didn't actually know of the victim's violent tendencies. That's a central holding in Eggers.
And, Your Honor, I understand that Eggers does have definite issues that we would have to overcome. I do believe, though, that the other case law that we've received from the Supreme Court indicates that one should not...
No. I don't know where we can go. But the cases you're relying on are the cases the D.C. Circuit relied on Eggers, and the Supreme Court reversed and said those cases don't support that proposition.
Your Honor, I understand the court's question. I understand where the court is going with this. I would simply, again, point out that I believe that in this situation where Mr. Walker's life's liberty is at risk, he should be able to present a thorough defense under the Confrontation Clause. He should be able to and have a right to present corroborating evidence of his self-defense claim. As all trial attorneys will tell you, where they only have their client, the defendant, as a witness in support of their defense, you've got a tough case.
Amen. I said amen. Yes, life is like that. As Jimmy Durante used to say, them are the conditions what prevail. The law is against you. Other than that, you're doing splendidly. Nobody can fault you for your position.
Thank you, Judge. It appears I only have 1 minute left. If I could reserve that last minute after hearing...
I don't know whether you're going to have much to talk about. Unless he gets up and tries to talk us out of it, I mean...
I would be open to that, Your Honor.
I doubt if he is. He looks smarter than that to me.
Thank you,
Mr. Obenberger. Well, Mr. Klotz, you've been challenged by the bench.
Yes.
Can you talk us out of it?
Morning, Your Honors.
That should end it, shouldn't it?
I think the court's questions were very eloquent, and I have in no position to try to argue the court out of its position on the admissibility of the evidence. I think...
Nevertheless, you're going to try it.
I am not. If the court has no questions of me and doesn't want to pursue it, I would be willing to rest at this moment.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, Mr. Klotz. It doesn't look like you have much to rebut.
Oh, no,
Although you almost made it, yeah.
I would say it's hardly fair, but, Your Honor, again, I would indicate that I believe that this evidence should come in, that with Mr. Walker's life, liberty at risk, this evidence of the prior bad act should come in because it does show the propensity of the alleged victim towards a violent act, specifically of a sexual nature. Your Honors, I would argue that this evidence was eminently and critically important to Mr. Walker's case because it did corroborate his story. Mr. Walker was essentially his only witness. His mother did testify for all of about 3.5 pages of transcript, essentially that Mr. Walker seemed panicked and stressed after the incident. So Mr. Walker really had only his word to rely on. This corroborating evidence would have helped to establish and prove up his argument that this was self-defense and that he was acting solely in the defense of himself. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Ehrenberger, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment. And sometimes the position is a little rough, but thanks for the effort.